Hello, friends, and welcome back to the second hour of Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington, on 1150 AM just outside Seattle in the United States. I'm actually today broadcasting from Portland, Oregon at the wonderful New Renaissance Bookstore. If you are in the Portland area tonight, I will be giving a special presentation on the Immodal Peace Project from 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m., and I'd love to see you if you're in the Portland area or would like to drive here. We are one of the top-rated talk show radio programs in the Seattle area, and we are also the fastest-growing psychic and UFO radio program in the world with listeners in over 60 countries. I'm also told by my reliable sources off-planet that my radio show also has a lot of listeners and supporters in the Galactic Alliance. So welcome to the show, my many friends, both off-planet and on-planet. We're entirely supported by donations, and for those who'd like to donate, even a dollar would help. Please go to our website at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just go to the donate button. I also have a new column on my webpage called Ask Ted, and that's at www.outofthisworld1150.com. And if you have any spiritual questions at all, feel free to email them to me and I'll answer them the best I can. I like to help people. The purpose of my radio program is to raise consciousness to make this place a better place to live. And I know with everyone's help, we can make this planet a much better place. As I mentioned during the last hour, I'm sponsoring a Galactic Wisdom Conference at the Inn at Gig Harbor from March 6th to the 8th, 2015, next month. It's located only 10 minutes from Tacoma or 40 minutes from Seattle. And for more information, please see our website at www.galacticwisdomconference.com. The accommodations are being provided at the by the Inn at Gig Harbor, and when you call them, their phone number is area code 253-858-1111, and I have to tell you, 1111 is a special angelic number, and they will give you, be sure to tell them when you call for staying at the Inn at Gig Harbor that you're there for the Galactic Wisdom Conference, because people have called the Inn at Gig Harbor before and been turned away, actually, because they've been told erroneously that all the rooms were booked. Well, they're all booked for the conference. So if you call them, you have to tell them that you're there for the conference, and they will give you a discount off their regular rate. We're having a lot of interesting people there, including Jerry Wills, who will be flying in from Arizona. Jerry is an expert in removing alien implants. So if you have an alien implant, he will be having a special healing session on Saturday night, March 7th. Free for the people who are at the conference. Also, Susan Shumsky will be flying in from New York City. She's the world's authority on healing auras and chakras. For those interested in the scientific and spiritual work of the late Dr. Masaru Emoto, Michiko Hayashi and Dr. Yasuo Nemoto of the Immodal Peace Project will be coming in from Japan to give a very special presentation. We will also be having Lois Berman, a famous Boston psychic who has her own psychic and radio television programs. Phoenix Redhawk, a well-known spiritual healer from Long Island, New York, will also be flying in, as well as Seattle psychics Teresa Carroll, Darcy Adams, and Don McFarlane, as well as the amazing and wonderful Robert and Rachel Zink from the Portland area. And I have to tell you, Darvin will be also, my friend, our guest today, will be also flying in from Tokyo for the conference, and he will be helping me to give the welcoming remarks to everyone on Friday evening, March 6th. And with that, I'd like to welcome you to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you, Ted. Nice to be joining you from a freezing cold morning in Japan.
Really? What's your weather like there? Is it?
Morning's about 3-4 degrees centigrade. And you know, if it's a warm day, we might get up to about 10 this time of the year, but it's very nippy, and Japanese houses are not designed for winters like this, so it's brisk.
Oh no. Well, maybe we can send some warmth your way to warm you up over there then. I wanted to tell my listeners a little bit about your background. You are an author and lecturer. You're also a film producer and an anthropologist who've lived in Japan for decades. You write and speak fluent Japanese, and you've done groundbreaking work on remote viewing, ancient civilizations and ETs, holistic medicine, and paranormal phenomena, including crop circles, and you're establishing a learning center in Japan. And he's also currently working on a wonderful book and a DVD together with the famous Graham Hancock of England, who was on my show several months ago. I've looked at your website and seen your videos, Ihan, and I think you're one of the most interesting people in the world. I really enjoyed what I saw on your website.
Well, if I may just correct one aspect of my background there. I'm not an anthropologist, though I love anthropology. I'm a Japanthropologist, which is a term that I coined for describing what I feel that I'm doing here in Japan, embedded in a completely different culture. I wedded the word Japan to the word anthropology and put together Japanthropology, which you can't learn in any university anywhere, and nobody teaches it. You can only learn it by living and interacting with Japan over a long period, I believe. So that was a bit of a euphemism. I hope it didn't create any misunderstanding. I'm not a trained anthropologist, no.
Oh, all right, my friend. Well, I have 4 degrees in 5 subjects, and one of my degrees is from anthropology.
Noticed that, yes.
Yeah. So when I saw Japanthropologist, I thought, oh, you must be an anthropologist, of course. But living in a culture that's different from your own, of course, everyone has to be a bit of an anthropologist, because you have to understand the culture, of course, to live there. How long have you been there, by the way, Ihan?
It is year 41.
My goodness, my goodness. Yes. Well, Japan's a beautiful country, beautiful people, and I'm sure you can share many, many stories with us. How did you ever get interested in remote viewing? Just curious.
My wife is a very intuitive Japanese woman born in Osaka, and she tends to find the right books at the right time or give me the right information for the next move, let's say. And I had been, speaking of anthropology, I had been taking Japanese on tours around the world. I wouldn't really call them tours. I would call them show up and get ready to have an adventure, and the meeting point is Cusco or Merida or Edinburgh Airport, and then we're going to go off and do something amazing for a while. And so I did over half a dozen trips to the Peruvian Amazon with very adventurous Japanese. And we were doing a lot of work in the jungle with one particular shaman. And of course, as you can imagine, having very profound experiences. I realized after working with plant shamans for over 10 years in different parts of the world, that there's an expression that the plant chooses the people don't choose the plant. In other words, whatever it is you want to work with, in a sense, you have to be called to it. Not everybody is called to become a healer. Not everybody is called to become whatever it is, their forte in life. And I was taking people to the jungle, hoping that they would have the experience that I had been having, which was truly wonderful. And I realized there's a limitation on how certain people at certain times can or will not grow, and that there must be a way that we can all reach into our deeper selves, perhaps contact with our more intuitive nature, if you would like to put it that way, become a little bit more of our multidimensional selves. But the plant work, the shamanic work, is very extreme. As you may or may not know, it's very hard, it's very extreme, and it was well suited to my nature. I think I made the mistaken perception that it's well suited to anybody who thinks they're ready, but it's not. Mm-hmm. So around that time, my wife says, "Hey, I found this book, you got to read it." And I picked up the book, and I read a lot of books, I'm always reading, and it was called Cosmic Voyage, and it was by Courtney Brown. And, I took a cursory look at it and I said, nah, not interested. And she said, no, you got to read this. So I said, okay, I'll read it. And So I read it and I thought, yeah, okay, maybe. But she said, this is something you need to learn. I said, what? Remote viewing? This is 1996, late 96. And so to cut a long story short, in very early 1997, I went down to Atlanta in Georgia there, and to the Farsight Remote Viewing Institute, and spent 6 days in a dingy hotel room with about 15 other people, a couple of guys from NASA. There were a couple of detectives in there, a nurse, quite a broad section of people. And I learned to remote view absolutely in 6 days. And
Fascinating.
that's how it started, actually.
Wow.
And
Wow.
I taught many people since that time in Japan.
Fascinating. Well, I have to ask you, we during my previous hour, I had Ed Dames on, and I asked him what he saw for the US and the world this coming year in the future. And I just love to ask you the same question, Ehan. What do you see for well, what do you see for Japan and the United States for the coming year?
Well, I think I have to throw in a caveat here about remote viewing the future. I've had my students attempt the same thing. And I'll never forget one of the early future remote viewing sessions we did was way back around 2000. And at that time, my whole focus was 2012. Because I really was sure that we were heading towards something very powerful in 2012. And I tackled it from many different angles, as many other people do. And so I had my students do the target, 2012 Earth conditions. And of course, for people who are not familiar with remote viewing amongst the listeners, you imagine a brown envelope with eight random numbers on its front, and inside is a piece of paper on which is written, in my case, it was written in Japanese, 2012 slash Earth conditions. And it was remarkable because I had 10 people remote view this. They were basically trained. They weren't professional, like some of Ed Dames's people are extremely high level and very professional. However, I had been getting very good results with the Japanese, and it was astonishing because half of the people had such intense cataclysmic event type data that one of them actually was started to shake and cry, and the other half had some kind of beatific experience of a much more evolved situation on the planet, much more peace and harmony. And in fact, what you would imagine if the information we were getting from many sources was correct, which was there was going to be some kind of a breakthrough. We were actually going to discover our spirituality at a much deeper level, and thus the planet would change. So, given that session, Ted, I would like to offer the possibility that as many people know in quantum physics, that in every second we're creating this we're creating our experience of what's going on every single second. And so the broad strokes of a future may be set out there in the synchronic vacuum, let's call it. But everything can change in a second. So I'm very wary of any predictions or prophecies that just rely on remote viewing, because I've also discovered through remote viewing that despite all the information about double blind targets and nobody in a room is supposed to know what's going on and so forth, there have been a lot of mistaken readings in remote viewing, including those from Mr. Ed Dames himself, if I may be so bold. And so it is certainly not perfect. It is certainly
Sure.
not set in stone. And so I would not take seriously the idea that we're going to be hit by a death blow from the sun, by a massive flare, especially when, and I study the sun on an almost daily basis. The sun is going into a very quiet mode right now, and the possibility of getting whacked by a massive solar flare drastically diminishes by the second. And I was actually on Japanese television recently talking about exactly that phenomenon, that the sun is lacking in sunspots. So to wrap it all up, Ted, I think that remote viewing is potentially useful for some kind of very maybe near remote viewing. But when it comes to past events, now remote viewing is unbelievable. So there's a differentiation here. We can clearly access past information, but future, I'm doubtful.
Sure. Well, I can understand. I remember Nostradamus in the books that I've read. There were a series of books.
I just lost you. Interesting synchronicity when Nostradamus comes up. Boom. Ted and I are disassociated in space and time. Please continue. You were about to say about Nostradamus before we got interrupted.
There was a book, there was a three-volume set published by Dolores Cannon. She passed away last year, unfortunately, from I believe in a car accident. But she had this wonderful set of a three-volume set, Ihan, where she and a group of about 12 to 15 psychics contacted Nostradamus back in the 16th century. And he was very happy that they contacted him because he could see from his own remote viewing, if you could say, that a lot of his quatrains were being misinterpreted in that during the last century. So he explained a lot of things, and the way he explained future timelines and events is that it's kind of like, well, here's a good example analogy. Let's say you're driving through a city and you're on a freeway and you've got several different exits depending upon your choices, and then the freeway finally, let's say for example, forks into two different secondary roads, and timelines in a way are kind of like that, according to what Nostradamus said, in that depending upon individual choices, and individual choice not only on your own level but also as a society and as a group too, depending upon what choices collectively the society makes or individuals make, it can also alter that future in the future. So that you hope people make the right choices, but sometimes they don't, and sometimes it's a learning experience. But that's why I think what you're saying is that it's more difficult to forecast what's going on in the future sometimes because of the different possibilities.
Well, I certainly am a healthy believer in the power of prophecy. I do think that there are certain broad strokes that have been talked about for thousands of years and certainly do appear to be occurring. And at the same time, the power of humanity to change the situation quickly is always existent. And it's a very mysterious subject. It really is. I mean, it's obvious that Mother Shipton, for example, in one of my first books I put out in Japanese, Mother Shipton, who was the she was like the British equivalent and the female equivalent of Nostradamus. She was talking about combine harvesters, submarines, TV, world wars, women dressing like men, etc. You know, she was talking about fashion back in the Middle Ages. So there's absolutely no question, no matter how skeptical you are, that this woman was reaching far into the future and she was seeing stuff. So obviously humans have an ability to transcend space and time, and you know,
Sure.
science would of course corroborate that if it's any real science. However, when it comes down to the very blow-by-blow accounts, we always seem to miss the point in prophecy, as so many failed, so-called failed prophecies seem to demonstrate, especially when we're expecting them to fulfill our wishes, and it's just at that time that they seem to go awry. So it's an intriguing and amazing subject, and I can't pretend that I have any deep understanding of it, but I can say from remote viewing experience that time is definitely travelable in consciousness, if I can use that word. But when we go into the future, and if I can just add something here that might be of use to the listeners, I went to an Italian esoteric community of very advanced, I can only call them alchemists and magicians, in a place called Damanhur, which means the city of light. Have you ever heard of this place, Ted?
Actually, I have. I've been interested in it, but I'd love to learn more. Please continue.
So Damanhur, briefly, was founded approximately 20-odd years ago by a very amazing gentleman who went by the name of Falco. And he was a healer who got a vision, or he was contacted. I later found out that this was actual, this was an actual contact event. He revealed later on that a shining disc had landed near where he was in North Italy, and on the surface, there was no contact apart from on the surface of this vehicle, if we can call it that, were shown images of what he had to do in the future. And what he had to do was to dig a massive underground connection of chambers that would become the Temple of Humanity, in which would be represented all the gods of humanity, and it would be used to help evolve humanity to get on a correct timeline, because as the Hopis suggested in their rock art, if we carry on the way we're going, we're going to hit a wall. So we have to change timelines. And over the years, he and a devoted group of people dug by hand. They dug 6 million buckets worth of rock and gravel and sand out of the ground
by hand,
by hand at night, and they used to play music to cover the sounds of some of their operations, because they were doing this in a very traditional Catholic neighborhood of North Italy. If anybody had found out that they were digging in secret to build an occult temple to change the timeline, they would have got lynched. So they carried on in secret for many, many years. I've been inside the temple many times. I took the first group of Japanese in there in 97. It's an unbelievable work of art. And this man is like Da Vinci wrapped up with Einstein and with a bit of Shakespeare in his back pocket. I mean, a multidimensional genius of a man. Alberto Aurodi was his real name. And so Damanhur is, and certainly at that time was, before it was made public, one of the insiders revealed its existence, and it was going to be trashed by the Italian government because they didn't have permission. But when they saw what was inside, the level of the art, it was like the Renaissance had hit underground. And they said, the Council of Beaux-Arts said, oh no, we can't destroy this place, it's too beautiful. But the purpose, to get to the point here, the purpose, the entire purpose of this gigantic underground temple was to time travel.
Really?
That's the entire purpose. The time travelers. And I saw their time machine, and I actually translated from Italian to English to Japanese the physics of how they send people back into the past, why they send them back into the past, and how many times they've gone back into the past. And either these people are the most unbelievably talented storytellers with a believability and credibility level way above the best actors I know, or they are traveling back into time using very sophisticated technology, using the telluric currents of the earth itself and their consciousness-raising activities, meditation, dance, sacred dance, etc., to heighten the vibration within the temple to the extent that they can use that energy to teleport themselves back through time, back, notice, never forward. And that's the point, because Falco explained to me, he said that as information becomes more and more dense, as we ourselves become more and more infused with more information, it becomes harder and harder to actually not only guess the future, but to travel into it. Whereas when you go back, there is less information and there is less complexity. Therefore, it is easier to go from higher complexity to lower complexity rather than the reverse. So he said, we can never do forward moving time travel, only back. And I thought that was a very interesting comment. And it, for me, scientifically, it made sense that to go to the more dense from the less dense could be a lot harder. So just one brief example, Ted, I said, okay, I hear a lot of stories. You know, I travel around, I meet a lot of people. Tell me exactly like how you think you're going to change the future. Mm-hmm. He says, okay, we went back to, I think he said it was somewhere like 2000 BC, to the same area in Italy where they actually did the experiment. And he said, our mission was to push a boat which had just been, it was like one of the first boats that ever figured out how to make on this river community. Nobody else had a boat downstream or from them. I think it was a story like that. And he said they deliberately set the boat adrift so that it would be discovered by another community way downstream, and therefore they would start building boats quicker, which would lead to, you can imagine, the multiform changes that would involve. And he said, but they carved their initials on the boat before they did this, right?
Mm-hmm.
I thought, this is going to be a good story, lad. Mm-hmm. And he said, yeah. And he said, 2 years ago, the local archaeological group dug up the boat.
Oh, you're kidding. Oh, my goodness.
And
oh,
I says,
goodness.
Are you kidding me, man? He says, oh. Yeah. No. He says, and our initials were on it. So either these guys are the most unbelievably talented storytellers, but I didn't get that feeling when I was there. If you visit Damanhur, and you can, and you go into that temple and you see what they've done, and they got this like wee twinkle in their eye, like they know, like something's going on here. And I found out what it was.
Well, that's just fascinating. I just want to take a quick station break, Ehan, and say that this is the, for those who are just tuning in, this is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in beautiful Bellevue, Washington, 1150 AM. We have Ehan Derivi on the line with us by Skype in Japan. I consider Ehan one of the world's most interesting people. Well, Ehan, you know, I'm sure you've heard of the Montauk experiments in this country, Yes, and I have contacted people to be on who've been with those experiments as well. But I do believe it's possible, certainly, to travel both backward and forward in time. There are years ago, I was able to read several wonderful books from Contact from the Pleiades. Now, the Pleiades are about 60 light years from here. They're also called the Seven Sisters, and they say that we were seeded from them many, many millennia ago. We look just like them, except they're a little taller and they have their earlobes are slightly longer. But otherwise than that, they look just like us. And according to the books that I've read, that they can time travel as well. And there was a series of pictures, and the book is called UFO Contact from the Pleiades. It was published back in 1980. Mm. And I remember in the middle of the book, there's two pictures. There was one picture taken of a tree on a mountain slope in Switzerland, clearly showing the tree. And then it was taken, another fascinating picture was taken after the Pleiades had gone back in time and removed the seedling that was there maybe 50 years earlier, and then come back to the forward. And they took the same picture, and there were two timelines they took a picture of, one with the tree and one without. So they said that they could time travel. So I know it's entirely possible.
Oh, I have no doubt it's entirely possible. I mean, Einstein himself, of all people, I mean, he clearly said space and time are illusions. And, you know, from the point of view of of quantum mechanics or from higher consciousness, whichever way you want to approach it, there definitely is an illusory nature to time, a very slippery slope. And theoretically, there is no real argument that the future is possible. In my own experience, I have delineated it to mainly the past. The future is wide open. I feel that we're in very, very difficult, dark times on the planet right now. And, you know, since I was the, I used to have the nickname in Japan, Mr. Ascension, Mr. 2012. And
really?
You can, arguably, I was the most outspoken individual in the nation talking about 2012, about massive transformation, possibly associated with a cosmic incident. I was very hopeful and extremely positive that we were heading into something much better than the direction that we had been going in prior to 2012. And although many may argue that something deeply, fundamentally wonderful did happen in 2012, I have to say, as a remote viewer, where we really need to nail down our information and corroborate it. That's what remote viewing teaches you, is nail down the facts. Do they actually apply to this target, or is this just a daydream you have in an imagination made up data? I don't see much indication in 2015 yet, though I am very hopeful, that we are going in a direction of more peace, as war is being stoked in the Middle East to full heat and dragging in as many people as possible, including the Japanese. I don't see that. I see a dark night that may be the dark night of transformation. So my enthusiasm was both tempered and my beliefs were deeply challenged around 2012. But it's all out there waiting for us here. And part of that is contact. Part of that is definitely the quote-unquote extraterrestrial question, which I've been involved with most of my life.
Well, I have to tell you, Ihan, that one of the presenters I'll be having at my conference, Galactic Wisdom Conference, next month from March 6th to the 8th in Gig Harbor in Gig Harbor, Washington, will be Scott Lemriel. Now, Scott's a interesting fellow, wonderful guy. He's had face-to-face contact with members of the Galactic Alliance for the past 54 years, and he's actually put me in touch with them as well. Wow. And they're actually here now with me psychically. And they said that a lot of the wars on this planet and the conflict are actually engineered by dark forces who actually feed off the negativity. They feed off all this garbage, if you will. But they've also said in the same breath that evil as an experiment on this planet is ending. And this is the same thing that the Dalai Lama has stated as well. So the current conditions of fighting and constant wars is not going to continue. It's going to be toned down. And the people who are now in the middle of all these wars will be transformed into far more benevolent creatures. I know it's a tough road and it's challenging for people. And this is what I was discussing with, Major Ed Dames last hour. And it's important, I think, when you think of the future. If you think that negative things will happen, guess what? Your belief systems help create those negative things. So it's always good to try to maintain a positive attitude about the future, even when times are tough, and even if you're having a lousy day. But
I couldn't agree with you more.
Well, thank you, Ihan. Thank you so much. You mentioned Albert Einstein. He came in on a program I had. I mentioned this earlier with Dr. Hurley. I was on a couple of days ago on Monday, and he's here now. Actually, if you'd like to ask him any questions,
tell me more about him.
Well, he's very busy on the other side. There's a whole bunch of scientists on the other side he's still working with, and he said he was. I'll repeat what I said on Dr. Hurley's show. He's repeating this to me now. He was used as a pawn to access nuclear technology back in the late 30s and during the Manhattan Project of the early 40s. He says now he regrets that involvement because nuclear energy has been very destructive for planet Earth. It's a technology he's saying now that we should have never had. It actually was first given to the Nazis in the early 30s. And he only advocated, he wrote this key letter to President Roosevelt in 1939 as a way to get the United States started on what became the Manhattan Project for the nuclear weapon, as a way to fight the Nazis, because he was afraid that they would get it. And of course, if they had gotten it, then, you know, the world would be probably very different today, and not in a good way. But he said it's technology that we should have never had, Ehan. And
I got a question. Absolutely. Good. The question is, what is his opinion about the Large Hadron Collider machine at the CERN Institute in Geneva, which is where in 2012, and this is the one thing that happened in 2012 that could be significant, the so-called God particle, the Higgs boson particle, was discovered. What's his feedback on that?
Let me meditate for a moment. A very significant discovery, but it's if used in the wrong way, it could lead to destruction of this planet. That's what he's afraid of. I mean, he's telling me now that technological advances without concomitant spiritual growth can lead to disaster for the people on this planet. It's kind of like if you've got some children in a room and they're young, and you give them loaded guns, Ehan, and they're all they start firing each other. One of these times, the kids could easily kill each other or kill one of their friends or maybe their parents. So it's the same thing. Sure, you can have technological advancement, but you must have spiritual growth along with that, or else you're asking for trouble. And that's
very good feedback. This is also something I feel. You know, there was a hilarious Facebook video this morning of a bunch of rebel soldiers in Africa given a monkey a machine gun. Some people have said it's a fake to advertise the Planet of the Apes, but it's a hilarious scene where the monkey grabs the machine gun and actually starts shooting at the soldiers and scares the bejesus out of them, right? Sure. But it's an interesting analogy to what you just said. And this is absolutely and obviously true. If you give an undeveloped civilization the ability to do things that are far beyond their moral reach, then they're only going to be able to utilize it at the level of their consciousness, which is destructively.
That's true.
And, I saw these guys in CERN breaking out the champagne and saying, I think we've got it. And with all respect to science and its wonderful advances, I question the ability of scientists right now to use that wisely. And so the feedback you got is right on. Did I lose you? No, yes, we're still here. Got some static, but still here.
Okay, good, Ehan. I was going to be on my Boston radio station again yesterday, but it's kind of a long story. Then I was and then I wasn't. They had another guest on quickly. But during that time, there was a friend that Professor Einstein brought in yesterday, and he's here again now. I'm a little overwhelmed. He'd like to talk to you if you'd like to ask him any questions. His name is Leonardo da Vinci.
Oh, Leonardo! Oh, love you, man.
I'm not making this up. He is here.
No. I love Leonardo. It's an incredible synchronicity. Yesterday, and this is what really interests me right now, is the operation of synchronicity. Yesterday, I put a picture, a portrait of young Leonardo on the Facebook of a friend who had, he's in his mid-60s, who's the, he's a dead ringer for the older Leonardo. And so let me just put my focus here and ask the question, Because obviously Leonardo had visions of the future. He was a magnificent remote viewer who saw, he saw helicopters and parachutes, you know, and
That's all right.
kinds of devices long before anybody else. He had amazing powers of observation. What I would like to ask Leonardo is that he never really made his spiritual source, or let's say his spiritual belief system, very available for us to know. He was obviously a genius. He was obviously an artist and a scientist and a remote viewer. But what of his spiritual beliefs? What was the core belief that kept him moving as a vegetarian, for example, in that world, as a very different man from other men? What was the faith that powered him? That's my question.
It was a time where he had to be very careful about the church, because the church could easily burn people at the stake if they said anything wrong or took offense at anything. At the same, he's pointing me to Galileo. Galileo actually faced an inquisition by the church at the time because of his belief that the Earth was not the center of the universe, and said it was a planet with, along with other planets in a solar system, of course, that we went around the sun. Now we accept that as fact, but back when Galileo, and also in Da Vinci's time, that you had to be very careful what you said. So he's telling me now, Da Vinci is saying now, that he kept his spiritual beliefs very close to the vest, to use a 20th century term. He of course believed in a supreme being and in a God, but he was very careful on who he told and how he talked about it, because it was for his own survival. He had to be very careful about that.
Absolutely. I'm so glad that he came through. These are two people I've got the enormous respect for, Einstein and Da Vinci. Feel very close to Da Vinci in many ways, because actually, Ted, when I was teaching remote viewing, I changed the name from total remote viewing. And remember that episode I shared where with you on the telephone, Ed Dames and I did have contact in the past. We had a bit of a moment there, because I called my remote viewing TRV and his remote viewing was called TRV, and he trained my teacher, Courtney Brown. Remember, we shared that. And
oh,
so
right.
I changed the name to Da Vinci Vision.
You did?
Yeah,
oh,
because Da Vinci was obviously a highly gifted remote viewer, and I wanted to approach remote viewing from a more artistic angle. And I found a book which described the seven key qualities of Da Vinci as a genius. And there were qualities, for example, like corporitala, which means body, literally. But many people don't know that he was supremely physically fit. He could stop a horse at full gallop by sticking his hand out and grabbing the reins. Things like sfumato. That was another Italian term, which meant kind of like non-committal or kind of vague. It's how you use blurred edges in art to create something that definite edges wouldn't. And it refers to, in our modern parlance, chaos theory, for example. So he had seven of these things. Scienza arte was another one. Use both your left brain and your right brain. Their analog and digital systems for appreciating the universe, which gives you science and spirituality, gives you music and gives you art. So he has been a great inspiration to me, and still is to this day. And my God, wouldn't it be great if we had a few more dozen of these guys around? Maybe they're already here. What do you think, Ted? Have we got a few of them around still?
Actually, yes, they've reincarnated in various ways. And the soul, actually, they're telling me now, has been split, because Da Vinci himself had so much genius, as did Einstein. Einstein is actually, he's telling me now, in several different places all at once.
Oh, good, good.
There's two more individuals here who are just showing up, and they want to say something. The other one is... He came through on Monday as well, J. Robert Oppenheimer.
Oh, Oppenheimer, yeah.
He was instrumental in the Manhattan Project.
Yes.
He's saying, he's quoting the Bhagavad Gita, Hindu scripture. He's saying to me now, "Now I become death, destroyer of worlds." That was his. That's what he said when the when he witnessed the first test of in July 1945 of the atomic bomb in White Sands in New Mexico,
Yes.
and he immediately knew that it was a technology that we shouldn't have.
Yeah.
We have someone else here too who just came in. Oh, welcome. It's Ambassador Terillian of the Galactic Alliance. They comprise, and it's an alliance of 435 million planets, all benevolent, mostly human, not all, mostly human, very spiritually advanced, tens of thousands of years ahead of us, both spiritually and technologically. And he's saying now that we were given this nuclear technology by the reptilians, who they wanted. The reptilians wanted humanity to destroy ourselves so they could take over the planet. But they first gave it to the Nazis, and then that's how things started. They actually influenced our scientists to give us technology that we were clearly not supposed to have. And like little kids playing in a sandbox with loaded guns, shooting at each other. But what's happening now, and this is a good thing, is that our consciousness is rapidly increasing, and we're rapidly advancing to the point where I think where we will be able to truly fulfill our destiny as powerful spiritual beings. I think Nostradamus was right, and I agree with Ed Dames that I think in another 15, 20 years, humanity on this planet will enter into 1,000 years of peace and prosperity and spiritual development. And we will live from our current, what, 80, 90 years to approximately 1,000 years, because in other human planets in this part of the Milky Way galaxy, normal human planets, advanced civilizations live for about, each individual lives for about 1,000 years. And not only that, but they also have 100% of their brain capacity instead of only 8 to 10%. Oh, here's Einstein saying the same thing. He's just came in now, and he said that's right, because he always used to say that, we only use perhaps 8 to 10% of our brain capacity. He said that he's telling me now, people who use 10% of their brain capacity, they are in fact geniuses. But imagine what kind of world it would be if everyone used 100% of their brain capacity. But this is what we're going toward, and this is why your work and the work of my station is so important in raising humans' consciousness. And that's one of the goals of my Galactic Wisdom Conference next month, is to raise consciousness to make this place a better and happier place.
Absolutely.
And yeah,
Absolutely.
absolutely, absolutely. And I was going to ask you too, Ihan, what do you see? I know that remote viewing is not an exact science, and it can be changed, of course, by our belief systems. But have you looked into the future for humanity on this planet? I'm just curious to see what your opinion is.
My focus ever since 2012 has been on taking, let's call it new paradigm information, leading edge information, not only in the realm of science, but in East-West philosophical studies. And having spent most of my life in the Orient, but still very much being a product of the West from a Christian background, Scottish, Irish, I see that we have a great confluence possible ahead of us of the great wisdom of the East and the great wisdom of the West. It happened in the early 70s, Ted. I was recently at Esalen, which was the leader in bringing Zen, Taoist, Sufi ideas to the West way back in the 70s. And then it seemed there was a huge interest, there was a movement, there was a surge, and then it kind of petered out. And we got taken over. The hippies became yuppies, who then became stockbrokers. You know the
Right.
story.
Right.
We had a chance then. And ever since then, it seems that since the 80s, anyway, really good studies and experience of Oriental wisdom traditions has kind of disappeared. So I think it's time. And what I see for the near future is it's time for the best of all traditions, East, West, North, and South. And that includes, of course, the Aboriginal traditions from all around the world, the ancient wisdom keepers from many, many indigenous groups. The East, the West, the North, and the South have to start meeting on the same solid ground, and they have to start sharing their wisdom with humility, with deep humility, because I think if we're going to have any positive way forward, we absolutely have to learn the lessons of humility. And Oppenheimer learned too late. Oh my God, I've released a death machine. And you feel like saying, well, if you
Sure.
were so smart, laddie, how come you couldn't figure it out from a start? Doesn't take a brain surgeon, as my sister would say, right?
Well,
So.
he's saying now that he was caught up in patriotism, and he truly thought, he's telling me now, Professor Oppenheimer is saying now that he truly thought that having the bomb would be a peaceful thing. Of course, it's turned anything but peaceful since that time. And Einstein's saying now that he was used as a pawn. And he got caught up in the politics too, because he was the one that originally started it in 1939 with his letter to President Roosevelt.
Yes.
But
Yeah, well, how can you can't bring peace through violence. I mean, Gandhi knew that, and all the great peacemakers knew that, because they had a higher level of consciousness, you know.
That's right. Well, one of the things I want to tell quickly is we've got just a couple minutes left, and I just want to make some quick announcements and then and give you the rest of the time, Ihan, to wrap up your wonderful interview. Ihan will be joining me in the opening remarks at the Galactic Wisdom Conference in Gig Harbor, Washington, on Friday, March 6th at 5 p.m. And if you have more information about the conference, please see our website at www.galacticwisdomconference.com. I also would love to get some help with some volunteers. I just need help in setting up tables and doing some other kind of paperwork things. If you can help me with that, that'd be great. Just give me a
I'll help
call.
you with that.
Thank you, Ian. I appreciate you. My phone number is 509-750-9793, or you can just email me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. And the other thing I was going to mention too is that I think we are all God's children, certainly, and we can certainly learn from each other. And the future for humanity is very bright. That's why that's why I'm doing the conference next month and doing my radio show. And Ehan, that's why I wanted you on today, because you're such an interesting guy. I think you're one of the most interesting people in the world. And we've got about a minute or two left, and I want you to have the rest of the time for.
Well, I will help you to set that up. I'll be in Seattle, arriving in Seattle now on the 4th. So we'll be in plenty of time to help you put up the tables. I know what it takes to make an event like this happen. I've done many of them here in Japan. It takes energy and commitment and courage to put something together that's out on the edge that the masses may not yet understand. So I salute you and support you for doing that, Ted, and look forward to meeting you and
Thank you,
sharing a
Ihan.
little bit of time with the people there. Thank you for having me on the show today. God bless the whole lot of you who are listening, and look forward to seeing you.
All right, Ihan. I'll meet you at the airport when you fly in. And I hope you have
Thanks
a
a
wonderful
lot.
weekend.